Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pots, pies.
My wife's cakes are selling up hotcakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like? Delicious.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour with Matt Bentman, Sue Bailey and me, Alan Alder. Thanks to Ollie for the sports special. Today on Flavour, the foodie fight back. We find out what our local food producers are doing to bring you good food during this crisis. We feature home deliveries, food you can collect, food you can grow for yourself, food you can forage while you're out on your once-a-day exercise routine. And we look at food history, how city folk ate during previous pandemics. Also, the crisis may have a particularly bad effect on the supply of fish, and we'll find out about that too. We're not live in the studio today, but we do like to hear from you. You can direct message us on Twitter at Flavour105 or email us flavour@cambridge105.co.uk. Let's begin with home deliveries and Mark Poynton. Hi Mark, I know you're getting food to people somehow. Can you just explain for people who don't know about it what you're doing?
Yeah, so MJP Restaurant, we're offering a cold delivery service of free course meals. Basically, almost like a gastro or gourmet, so to speak, microwave meal. A choice of three starters, three main courses, and one dessert or maybe two desserts, depending on the week and supplies. We will drop it at your house, and we'll give you all instructions to heat it up and how to eat it. So basically, you get MJP dining at home.
Great stuff. And what's people's reaction been?
So far, so good. Everyone's loved it. Yourself included, Alan.
Indeed.
No, everyone's been really positive, and everybody ordered in the first week, pretty much 90% ordered in the second week as well. So it seems to be going from strength to strength. I don't think it's because people don't want to cook. I think people want something different. So obviously everybody's in the mindset now that they want to go out and eat at least once a week or twice a week, depending, you know, on funds and stuff, which they can't do. So I think it's nice that they can get a different sort of delivery service over than your normal deliveries or whatnot.
And how do you feel about it? Because it's a big change for you.
Yeah, it's certainly not a normal style of food. Well, it's still delicious food, but it's not a normal style of food that we would offer. Because obviously you'd come and have everything ready. But I'm happy that we can help people in these times of need. I'm happy that people are supporting us as well, because it's difficult times for everybody, including my business. But yeah, no, I'm just happy that people want it, and people are happy, and people are continuing to support it. And on the flip side as well, my wife is on the front line with the NHS, so anything we have left over on a Saturday night, myself and Bradley, my manager, we drop everything off at the hospital, whichever ward needs it. So last week we had 25 meals spare, so we dropped them off at the hospital and we made the nurses and doctors very happy, so we're continuing to do that as well.
Oh, that's absolutely brilliant. How long can you sustain it, if, you know, of the supply chains, okay?
Supply chains are okay at the moment. I suppose it's as long as Boris lets us, because we don't buy from supermarkets anyway, so that would never be an option. We buy from wholesalers. So as long as the wholesalers can still deliver, or we can still collect from wholesalers, we'll be able to carry on. And as long as we're able to deliver, because I imagine, you know, if people carry on being naive and still go out, we might get shut down at some point. But yeah, as long as it's feasibly possible, we will carry on.
Great stuff. And how do people get details?
So you can sign up to our newsletter at mjprestaurant.com. Follow us on Twitter, my Twitter, Mark J. Poynton, or MJP Restaurant, or go to the website, which is mjprestaurant.com.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And that was Mark Poynton.
Now here's a good example of how quickly the news has been changing. Last weekend, I visited Vanderlyle on Mill Road, the restaurant fronted by MasterChef finalist Alex Rushmer and his colleague Lawrence Butler. They just put out a hashtag on Twitter, calling themselves Vanderlyle to Go. Now, this is a new takeaway option and a reaction to the government's move towards closing restaurants, which, of course, the government then went and did this Monday just gone.
Leave your home. Change your name.
So here we are on Saturday afternoon. Very busy for you guys. It's about 4 p.m. We just finished a second rush, I believe.
We're doing fixed pickup points throughout the day, managed by our front of house team, and our reservation software has been very, very adaptable, so we've been able to manage it really, really well. So we have a sort of mini flurry on the hour every hour. I think this is about hour 4 of the brand new Van der Lyle business plan.
Obviously, we are reacting to the tweet that you put out saying exactly this.
Yeah, so I mean, there's been a flurry of activity over the past week as we try and pace ourselves for what changes are coming and what's happening right now. But we have hastily put together what we think is quite a delicious meal that can help people out in times of need. And we've been smashing those out today at a speed which we weren't originally set up to be doing, but here we are.
I've just ordered a salad because they'd run out of the 3-course by the time I ordered it. Really excited to support local restaurants.
Frequent flyer at Van der Lyle?
No, I've not been before, and I'd booked for June, and hopefully that will happen. But I'd heard really good things, so I was really excited, and then they've done this, so it's a great way of having a go.
Live alone.
Van der Lyle. I asked Alex where he got this name from, and he said it came from this song, Van der Lyle Crybaby Geeks, by a band called The National. They're one of Alex's favourite groups. Now, why is it worth mentioning this for this feature?
Eat your cake.
It's a made-up word. It doesn't have any meaning at all. It's fully ambiguous. So we thought it was appropriate for a restaurant that has very little concept other than cooking good food, but no fixed menu and very fluid ideas.
Then the lion cry, baby, cry. Oh, the waters are rising. Still no surprising.
I was just chatting to Tom Calverley, and he was hoping to get one of your meals, but he just missed out. So demand is high.
We've been hugely surprised and really pleased at how in demand the meal packs are. We're a small restaurant. We're used to doing 26 covers very, very slowly 4 times a week, and we suddenly found ourselves doing 80 covers a day, thinking about possibly ramping that up. But we've had to completely change the way we work in the kitchen. We have had to beg, borrow and steal storage space and fridge space to try and make sure that we've got enough to keep up to speed with everything, because this isn't about fancy garnishes, this isn't about complicated elements on dishes, this is about delicious, healthy, tasty food that people can take home and hopefully forget about things for just a short period of time.
It's about feeding people, really, isn't it, at the end of the day, especially what's going on. It's good to feel like we're doing every bit that we can to get people food.
Did you describe it just now as a food pack?
It's a menu, a short menu that will change on a very regular basis. We're thinking on a weekly basis. Today's menu is freshly baked focaccia with hummus, vegetable lasagna, and then lime and basil tart.
Lovely. Well, it's great to catch up with you. There's already a queue forming behind us, so I better let you carry on. Nice to see you again.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Twitter is perhaps the best way to keep up with Van der Lyle's movements and changing menu at the moment, and you can find them at Van der Lyle R. Remember, don't go to the restaurant because you cannot collect food from them anymore. Instead, you order from home and they will home deliver, dropping off your food from a safely distanced delivery point. And you can order online via exploretalk.com/Van der Lyle. Now, I'd just like to quote a tweet from a very happy customer that came up about them just the other day. They said, "A massive thank you to Van der Lyle for tonight's special delivery. So great that you've been able to go from restaurant to takeaway to delivery in the space of just 7 days. And still, the food is just so special. That is the highlight of our lockdown week." You know, I'd also like to point out that Afternoon Teas, remember Afternoon Teas? They used to be on King Street. Well, Jo Kraczynska is now working alongside the Van der Lyle team, and it's the first time I'd seen her in years as well. You can order her cakes via the same site, which is ExploreTok. Some examples, a whole chocolate Guinness cake with cream cheese icing, or a carrot cake with cream cheese icing too, and plenty of selection boxes are available too. So if that interests you, you can email as well, info@afternoonteas.co.uk, but do make sure to give plenty of notice. In fact, give Van der Lyle and Afternoon Teas plenty of notice, because there is a long waiting list for both.
And others are home delivering too. We'll give you some examples, but the situation does literally change every day. So the best thing to do is to check social media. Also, some of the providers, if you do get in touch with them, get overwhelmed. So don't be too surprised if you have to wait a bit or if things have sold out. But here are some examples. Gorilla Kitchen has home bow kits. To get one, send them a direct message along with your name and address and contact phone number. The kit comes frozen and you'll need to order by noon, 2 days before you want it. Their Twitter is at Gorilla Kitch. Culinaris is home delivering their stock items to CB 1 to 5 and are also open for business in Mill Road. La Latina Bustamante is open for delivery and takeaway, but only those, and that's from 11 until 6 p.m. Send them a DM to order. For fish and chips, Seed Tree is home delivering, details on their website, or you can call Cambridge 414 349. Aromi has an ordering service on the way. You can check out their website for details. Wildflower Kitchen is delivering pies, pastries, sausage rolls, vegan rolls, and ready meals for your freezer. Il Molino has home delivery for its award-winning olive oils. They're at il.molino.uk@gmail.com. A few more later in the programme. Check Twitter and Instagram for updates, or follow Flavour at Flavour105 on Twitter. Let's go back to the people who are managing to keep supplies of food going. Sue spoke with Dave Leach of Leach & Sons Butcher and Delicatessen.
You sound still very, very busy.
It is, yes. Yes, it's, we can't grumble, but not quite as busy as last week. I mean, there's still a lot going on, but last week was very, very busy.
Yes.
Incredibly busy.
I bet it was. Yes, I mean, I gather you, I mean, I know that you are also at Burwash and at the larder, and I've just been round there today, and it's very well stocked, and everyone seems to be calm there, but only one person is being let in at a time, i.e. not couples allowed in, and everyone is very much adhering to sort of hand sanitising and gloves and all the rest of it. So what's the situation in Melbourne?
Well, we have a very similar situation, actually. We've put controls, social distancing controls in. To be honest, last week was absolutely manic, and it sort of caught us a little bit by surprise, you know, dealing with it. And sort of towards the end of the week, we weren't overly happy with the social distancing, so we changed the system to... We've got various entrances there, sort of three different entrances from rear and front. So we now have one entrance at the front, which we ask people to go around to, and then the rear entrance is now an exit. And we control who's going in and out, so that works very well. And towards the end, we put it into place at the end of last week, and it was still very busy. This week, since sort of Monday, the situation is... has stabilised a bit, so it's a little bit easier to deal with. You know, people, I think also as a result of orders to sort of come, you know, step in line and do the social distancing, you know, people have been they've taken to it very well, and it's great. It's working very well. We're also operating a system where people can phone, you know, a sort of type of drive-through system, which we will do at Burwash also, where you can drive up to either at Melbourne at the rear, you know, to in the rear car park. We have a large car park, you know, up to the fairly close to the shop, the food hall at Burwash, and phone in which case we'll do the order, and then we can take it out, and we can take payment over the phone, and then take it out and leave it close to the car, or so there's no contact. No sort of person contact at all if people so wish.
Have you found people buying different types of meat at the moment?
Flour is very popular. Flour and bread and all the basics. And I think some of those things, flour sales have been quite quite high, actually, and I think that's just people can, you know, they can make their own bread and things like that and be more self-sufficient sort of on a longer term basis, you know, if they're shutting themselves away. But no, it's been quite, the sales have been fairly usual sort of stuff, but definitely minces and skewering steaks and that sort of thing, and chickens. And the only problem, if there is a problem, the only stocking problem that we've sort of had would be chickens have been a bit short, you know, because C.A. Leach is very lucky in the sense that we have our own supply chain. So whereas the supermarkets have sort of run out of meat towards the end of last week, we'd still got quite a bit of stock because we create our own and it hangs and that. We had to cut forward on some things a little bit further than what we normally would, but we've restocked again when we're operational in the processing. And but the things we don't process our own chickens. We get those from although it's a family run business and it's fairly local, you know, the demand for the chicken has been very, very high, and the supply of that, they're sort of playing catch up a little bit. But otherwise, yeah, everything, most things are, you know, there's no problems with stocking. So now people have stocked up, you know, as time will go on, as things stabilise, there shouldn't, certainly for our part, there should not be a supply problem. You know, people should rest assured that they, you know, what they want effectively should be available.
Oh, that's really good to hear. You know, as you say, the week's worth of initial panic has now stabilised, and people are being much more sensible about what they're doing, thank goodness.
Part of the worry last week when it was at its sort of height, you know, we need to protect everyone, basically, and especially, you know, our staff as well. But
of course,
otherwise, you know, if we have problems, then we're not going to be able to operate. So, you know, but things are really ticking over very nicely now with the social distancing, you know. So everyone's feeling quite, you know, much easier about it and relaxed than I. But the good thing is, I believe the public's really taking it seriously now, whereas there was a time which I, you know, prior to the weekend, I think some probably, you know, they've probably got closer than what they might, well, they are now anyway.
So from the sort of butchery point of view, I know you have your own abattoir there, don't you? So
we source everything from very local, so it travels not, you know, just a few miles. We have plenty of supply on that front. I've forged relationships with those suppliers for many years, and you know, it works very well. They do a really good job, and absolute full traceability.
I think it's really important to support one's local independence, one's local butchers, food shops and so on. And hopefully this is encouraging people to think about that a little bit more.
I certainly hope so. I personally am not, you know, it's a difficult one, but, you know, what we are seeing now is the flip side of sort of globalisation. You know, the fact that people are travelling around so much and that, how would you have thought that, you know, this pandemic could spread so quickly, you know, around the world, and it's absolutely frightening. You know, our generation have seen absolutely nothing like these sort of controls and that. I mean, I the last thing I can think is when there was foot and mouth, which in our industry, you know, the foot and mouth, which shut down all the abattoirs and various, you know, the processing places. And I mean, in the area we were the first abattoir open then, because primarily because the food miles, if you like, you know, the transfer from farm to the abattoir was very, very short in our sort of instance. And and it is a shame that it takes, when it comes down to it, you know, in crisis and that, you know, I think the public should sort of consider what, you know, the whole environment, the community would be like without the likes of the independent and, you know, sort of smaller traders, really. It'll be quite a bland sort of place, really. And I think long term, if that happens, then there'll be very little choice, really, for the public, which, so I you know, the consumer, they should perhaps take stock on this, and you know, on a longer term, when we finally get through it, and hopefully they'll they'll remember that, and it might change habits a little bit, you know.
Let's hope so. Oh, well, David, thank you ever so much. So I've been talking to David Leach's Butchers in both Melbourne and also at the Larder in Burwash. So
thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Thanks for your time. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Just before the lockdown, I was able to catch up with Tom Calverley of Calverley's Brewery, a popular microbrewery down by the train tracks in Hooper Street.
How are things going, Tom? It's Saturday afternoon. It's a gorgeous day.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day.
You've made some changes to your business.
Yeah, well, we've kind of gone back to our roots where we've just made the decision before the government had announced to close pubs and bars that the right thing to do would be to halt on-site drinking. We decided to go to the takeout route. Brewing means that we understand the importance of hygiene. It's key to survival, so that's how we're looking at it. So this is the thing that people, they're looking at what's going to happen and understanding the nature of economies and work out how to support what they like to live in and why they come to this, you know, why they might live in a city which has got interesting food scene and drink scene. And this creativity is allowing adaptation to happen because people are coming up with ideas that can ensure their survival and keep people employed. It's exciting seeing the ingenuity. My brother, overnight, he set up an online shop. So we're doing deliveries within Cambridge, cycling beers around so that we can do doorstop drop, take a step back. Yeah, we're not going to slow down on production. We're just pushing all of the beers that we've got into cans so that we can get them on our online shop and cycle them around Cambridge a lot lighter and easier to transport. And also we have had requests just a little bit beyond cycle distance so we can get a courier to drop them off a lot safer than sending out bottles. So my wife's been working on some fun modernist inspired artworks for the labels. So yeah, watch this space. They'll be coming soon. The first will be IPA, then a pale ale, and then brewing a lager.
That's a great idea. Yeah. And also, I like what your wife is doing with the labels. I was down at Bacchanalia a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
And there's so many of the beers there. It's so popular now to have incredible, expressive, almost Picasso-esque art.
Yeah,
adorning the labels of all these cans. And there's even an art festival at the Tate, I think, specifically for beer can art.
The Tate embracing the beer culture within the bars is really awesome. They have, you can go in any of the cafes and get really good beer now. It's really good, and the fact that, you know, combining visual arts with brewers is an awesome thing, you know, definitely. It's ever changing, but at the same time, we're interested in the idea that this is a new situation for us, new avenues, and it's all change, and being able to cope with change is an important thing for a small business like us to be able to do. And the fact that we are small, me and my brother are both small build, and we both did gymnastics when we were little, so, you know, small and agile is what we like to think, yeah. The beautiful thing that we've always enjoyed is the people, and the idea of beer without people, that was the thing that we were trying to like comprehend at the beginning of the week. But then I just feel so grateful with the lovely people in Cambridge, you know, our friends just saying, we need to make sure you're still here, so hi, can we have some beer? And the thing is, I got a new beer this week called the Vossi Hop. It's using a yeast called Voss, which is a kvik yeast, so it's Norwegian farmhouse yeast. So Voss, I believe, is like Norwegian for like a body of water. It's a high attenuation yeast that ferments at 40 degrees, which is much higher than usual yeast, and it's super efficient. Kvik, meaning quick. The translation's quite there. You can see our shared root language there with the Vikings. And then it's just packed full of the Hallertau hop, which is almost white wine in quality, so it's quite sharp and it's got gooseberry grass flavours, and then dry hopped with Citra BBC, which is a Citra hop being processed in a certain way that really allows the essential oil of the hop to be loud and prominent when you dry hop with it, so you're getting the beautiful aromas that come from that hop flower.
It's good to hear you just waxing lyrical about those beers, still being so full of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
It's not easy, is it, when you are in any creative position where the pressure is on and you still got to keep that passion flowing?
Well, I think the size of our business allows for this agility and flexibility to be allowed. We do have a core range of 7 beers that we consistently make, you know, like our Nipah or our Porter. Quite a few people are wanting the same beers that they know.
Yeah.
When you've got an ever-changing world, that's when we desire consistency, which is why I understand why, you know, mass-produced lagers that all taste the same all the time. I understand the appeal. you know, change is something that a lot of people find hard to deal with. So sometimes if you've got something that is the same, then it's okay. But for myself, I enjoy variation and new flavour experiences.
All right, well, nice to catch up with
you
again, Tom.
Yeah, good to see you, Matt.
Yeah, hope everything goes well.
Yeah, thanks, dude. Yeah, it's all good, yeah.
And Calverley's Brewery is currently open for beer deliveries from Monday to Saturday. And if you order before 10 a.m, they will do same-day delivery. You can check out their online shop for details. That's Calverley's, calverleys.com/shop.
More news about getting food now. Emerald Foods, the market stall that sells coffees, teas, spices, nuts and olives and other things, is home delivering. You can email emeraldfoods@rocketmail.com or phone 7899 990830. But they're also still open at Cambridge Market, and they're there from Tuesday until Saturday, as is Chris, purveyor of fruit and veg, who we've heard on this programme before. Crystal Waters are still there. They sell fish from Wednesday till Saturday. Meanwhile, in nearby Bennett Street, Jack's Gelato is planning a home delivery service, and look on Twitter or Instagram for details. Thirsty in Chesterton Road is home delivering. You can put your orders in at wearethirsty.co.uk. And Bacchanalia in Mill Road is open for business, but it also will do deliveries. And Easter can still go ahead. Harry Spector's Chocolates are delivering. Details on their website. And Hill Street Chocolates, they're delivering too. See their website. Burwash Larder is open, and they tweet about what they have daily, but it usually includes fruit and veg, bread, pasta, cheese, and the hours now are Tuesday to Saturday, 9:30 till 2 p.m. So, to summarise, most independent food shops are open and have stock, so it is possible to avoid running the gauntlet at supermarkets or waiting 2 or 3 weeks for a delivery. And that's our view, anyway. And this is Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio. The supply of fish may be a problem, though. If prices drop too low, fishermen don't fish.
Alan asked fishmonger Ben Roberts, who has a fish van in Grantchester Street on Saturday mornings, about the prospects for fish.
Ben, what's happening to fish prices at the moment?
They were up on Monday. The prices jumped up on Monday morning on the market, even though there was a good supply. Cod and haddock and plaice and lemon sole and things all went up. Then, obviously, we had the announcement on Monday night about people staying in and not going out unless it's essential, which meant a lot of more of the outlets for the fresh fish, such as the fish and chip shops and things like that, all basically closed overnight. And the supply was still the same for Tuesday. Obviously, the demand was virtually nil, and the price plummeted. And I've no idea what will happen now, because obviously the fishermen will not work and will not go out to sea to catch fish that they're going to lose money on and use their quota on. On Monday market, the haddock prices nearly trebled from the week before, and the Tuesday market, they were down to a quarter of what they were the week before. So it is a massive drop. And like I say, it is really understandable that the fishermen are really going to look at this and think, why go out and work, and I'm going to lose money on my job and risk everything for it.
I read an article that said that because the continental markets, well, it mentioned specifically Spain and France, were closed, and that we export a lot of things like lobster, crab, Dover sole, whelks, that sort of thing, to those markets. We'd be flush with things like lobster and crab, and the prices would drop, and we'd all have a very nice time. So you're saying going to happen?
Like I say, when you were used to having an export market like we have for the fishermen, when that market closes, all of a sudden you are left with not masses of lobsters and things, but there will be a lag, because the rest of the country isn't all going to think, oh, lobsters are cheap, we'll all eat cheap lobsters, because the fishermen will say, no, we're not all eating cheap lobster, I'm going to lose money on this, I'll leave the lobsters in the sea, and when the time is right, I'll go out and catch it again. It's supply and demand at its basis level. If the demand is not there, the price goes down too much, they're not going to catch it.
Right. Has this ever happened before, anything like this?
There have been times when the fishing industry has been hit by either the weather or one thing or another, economic situations where the supply is massively outweighed demand and vice versa. So it's not unusual. I mean, it is a weekly occurrence that prices go up and down, and you know, even daily, just according to the supply and demand. But as far as I know, I don't remember ever being a case where Europe is closed trade-wise for fish. It's just unheard of.
Right. I mean, I know it's well before your time, but presumably during the Second World War there wasn't there wasn't a great deal of fishing.
I'm sure that's the case. You know, obviously, a lot of the fishing boats were used for patrolling and all the rest of it, even though they were probably little inshore boats trying to catch fish, but there were mines laid everywhere, so I can't see too many boats going out trying to catch fish then. They're little ones maybe, but yeah.
The fish that's around now, because I think there is a little bit of, there is some fishing going on now still, isn't there? What will happen to that fish?
Well, there is still a supply of fresh fish into the country by the British boats and from Iceland and direct from Norway and Faroe. So there are people still fishing. The problem is that if the price stays too low, they won't bother. I mean, it would be pointless. You just need to keep a steady flow of enough people to keep the price at the right level so that the demand that is here and the demand that we need to keep the flow into either supermarkets or to people such as myself that supply direct to the public at a constant level, because any sort of big fluctuation now will ruin it for all of us, because they will just stop fishing. And I do not blame them. You know, I obviously, it's my livelihood and I'll be out of work for however long it takes, but I don't blame them. It's their livelihood too, and you know, why go to work and it costs you money at the end of the day. Today there's fish, there's still fish, there's plenty of fish. This weekend I have no idea what will happen, and I have no idea how much is going to come. It might be lots, it might be nothing. I have no idea. Nobody seems to know who's catching the fish and how much is coming. It's really, really, really difficult. So also the farms for the Scottish salmon and for the Faroese and the Norwegian salmon farms, the transport's going to be a problem, because a lot of transports won't be working because the demand is so low, whereas before they were sending and exporting everywhere. It's gone right down. So that may stop as well. So it's really difficult. I don't want to sound too pessimistic, but it is really going to be a very difficult thing for me to keep going fresh fish. I love to keep going. I want to keep going. It's my passion. It's what I do. But I have no idea how long this is going to go.
You need the public to buy fresh fish, really.
Yes. I need the public to buy fresh fish, and I need them to keep supplying me with it so that I can do it. Yeah, great if that happens, but, everybody's got to be realistic about it. If it doesn't happen, it's for the right reasons, and, we'll all be safer for it if that's the case. But
let's hope it blows over in 2 or 3 months. But
at worst, yeah, absolutely. And the less people that are affected by this, the better for me, because, it's awful. It really is.
Yeah. Okay, Ben. Right, well, thanks very much. And that was Ben Roberts, who sadly faces an uncertain future. But on now to foraging, and Steve Thompson, the foraging chef, spoke to Sue.
Steve, this is very interesting times for everyone, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, we're all in isolation now. We're all locking down. It's a good time to start thinking about what we have around us so we can help balance our diets, stay away from the supermarkets.
Yes, I think that's a very sensible idea, and we're allowed to have sort of one exercise, walk out or whatever a day, so why not perhaps turn it into a foraging walk?
Exactly, it's great for the mind, it's good to keep us busy, it gives you something to do in the evening. You can combine your walk with foraging, then you've got your time to process everything afterwards, and there isn't a single one of us that can't go out on a walk and find something edible, even if you're in the middle of a city.
You're going to perhaps give us your forager's guide to what to do in a time of crisis.
Yes, so what we're looking at the moment, what we'll go through, is probably plants we've talked about before. However, they're plants that are in abundance right now. So we'll start off with nettles, because everybody can identify a nettle, be it a dead nettle, a red dead nettle, a stinging nettle. For me personally, the stinging nettles are the best of the bunch to eat. the best thing to do with them is soup.
Soup.
It's a wonderful thing to do out your store cupboard as well. If you've got some old potatoes, onions, things like that, think about leek and potato soup and then you're adding nettles in at the end.
I've been looking at some nettles recently and some of them, they're not the nice, fresh, juicy little nettle leaves you might want to use. They're a little bit older.
What you want to do is you want to take the centre of the nettle.
Okay.
So the top of it, basically, which is going to be like the softest, nicest part to eat. And because they come in abundance, you can just take a little bit off each plant. And then they're going to carry on growing. There will be new growth, so if you just cut your grass, keep an eye out because you'll be getting new growth come through. And obviously the new growth is much younger and fresher. But a very easy way to cook them is, say, fry off your onions, your garlic, a bit of potato, add some nice veg stock, and right near the end, get your nettles in. You want to keep them on a high heat. The less you cook them, the more goodness you're going to keep in.
Just really for a few minutes or even less than that?
Yeah, just blanch them, and then I would always blend a nettle soup because nettles have got a bit of a fairy texture to them.
Fair enough.
Blend it, you'll get a lovely bright green soup and it's full of goodness for you and vitamins.
I think I might go and try that later today. That sounds really nice. What else would you go for?
Another good one that's everywhere at the moment is sticky weed or goosegrass or cleavers. It's a plant that we all know. At this stage, we talked about it before, using it as young salad leaves when it's smaller. Well, now it's a little bit bigger. A really good thing you can do for every single morning is a nice little immune boost with it. It'll pack you full of vitamins. It's a diuretic, so it'll flush your kidneys through. And basically, take your cleavers at the end of the night, make sure they're well washed, but then put them in some water in the fridge. Leave them overnight to infuse. 8 to 12 hours later, you've got a lovely refreshing drink that will taste like cucumber in the morning. It's all cold infusion as well, so you're not cooking out any of the goodness. You're just taking the goodness from the plant into the water. And it's a really healthy way to start your day.
Nettles, we've done our goosegrass stroke cleavers. What else should we be looking out for that we can find quite easily?
Well, if you're around the villages at the moment, around South Cams, the Alexanders are in full flow and just starting to come into flower as well.
Alexanders being...
The Alexanders are part of the carrot family. They're quite easy to identify, but I would recommend getting a good guide, going on the internet to see first. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like a wild celery. So they like coastal areas a lot, but actually if you look on the sides of the road around South Cams, you can quite often spot them. At the moment they're about a foot high and in kind of like bushes, but when you find one patch, there'll be loads, and we've just started making loads of pesto out of them for pasta sauces.
What do their leaves look like?
So their leaves have got a three-pronged leaf at the end. Mm-hmm. They've kind of got the celery-style stem to them. They're very perfumey in flavour, with, at the moment, the flowers are kind of in bud. They're not fully opened up yet like a normal umbellifer. They're part of, like, the cow parsley family. But they've got little yellow flower heads at the moment.
Little yellow flower heads?
Yes. And what you're looking for on the leaves is, if you take each leaf that comes off the main stem, you'll have two leaves that come off at adjacent, and then you've got the main three leaves at the end. So two leaves coming off together, and then three leaves coming off together at the end.
In fact, a bit like a celery leaf.
Yes, exactly, yeah. It's part of the same family. Mm-hmm. And it's got that kind of, I think it's more peppery. It's definitely much more intense in flavour. You do that if you've got some scraps of cheese in the fridge, maybe some old nuts in the cupboard, blend that up with a bit of oil. You can put garlic in it, but I don't tend to, and lots of salt, obviously, because everything needs salt. And you've got a wonderful pasta sauce there.
I like the idea of looking in your store cupboard and seeing what, as you say, any sort of remnants of old nuts and things that you can blend in together and make use of.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we had a lovely, very well-aged Gouda that we found at the back of the fridge, which is an incredibly middle-class thing to say you found.
I like that.
That has gone straight in the pesto, and it was absolutely wonderful use of a cheese that was far too hard to be able to use for anything else. But we've grated it down and put it in, and it's a brilliant use of it.
Anything else that you would recommend? I know you said you've been out foraging very recently, and anything...
Yes.
Else you've seen on your travel locally?
Yes, we were out yesterday picking our salad leaves, basically. So we're getting some wonderful things, like we found miner's lettuce yesterday.
What is that? Miner's lettuce?
Miner's lettuce, or winter purslane.
Ah.
It's another one that's worth looking out for, having a look on the internet and reading up about it. It's got a lovely flower in the middle of the leaf, and once you see it, it's very easy to identify.
That sounds really nice.
That's got a lovely fresh pea flavour to it.
That sounds really nice.
And dandelion leaves, jack by the hedge... They're all absolutely wonderful now at the moment, and why go to the shop and take a risk at the moment when you can just step outside? Chickweed is another good one at the moment, and they're all absolutely brilliant for salad leaves. Primroses at the moment, obviously don't overpick the primroses.
So primrose, just the primrose flowers, nothing else?
Yeah, the flowers are lovely. You can eat the leaves as well, but I don't think there's any point. I go with a 1 in 20 rule. So if you see 20, pick one.
Okay. No, I like that idea. We've got, actually got quite a lot of garden primroses, so we've certainly got probably the wrong side of 200 little primrose flowers, so I think I can collect at least 20 out of that for salad.
Well, another wonderful thing we're doing at the moment, if you've got a slightly sweeter tooth, is making cordials. You've got all of the flowers that are just starting. And a wonderful one that we've got on the edge of our driveway at the moment is flowering currant. So the currant leaf is quite easy to identify. It's another three-prong one with nice grooves for the veins going through it. And then you've got the lovely drooping pinky red flowers on it.
Oh, yes, I love those. They're beautiful, aren't they?
They're absolutely gorgeous. And if you make a nice, pick them early in the morning on a sunny day. So like this morning was a great time to pick them. Don't pick too many because the bees love them.
That's the flowers you're talking about, yes.
They do, yes. Mm-hmm. We use the flowers to make a lovely cordial. So what we'll do with that is we'll use equal quantities of sugar and water, bring it up to the boil, leave it to cool down, and then steep the flowers in it.
Okay.
Just leave them there to infuse, basically.
And it doesn't matter whether it's granulated or caster sugar at all?
No, it doesn't matter at all because you're dissolving it in the water.
Yeah, and half quantities sugar and water. And do you need to add any citric acid to preserve it? Should you freeze the cordial or does the sugar in it preserve it of its own?
I would keep it refrigerated. If you leave it out to the refrigerator, it will start to slowly ferment. If you're going for the cordial, refrigeration should be fine. If you've made tons of it, yeah, keep some in the freezer if you've got space at the moment.
And so how long would the cordial keep in the fridge, do you think? A few weeks?
Yeah, you should get a good couple of weeks out of it in the fridge. The sugar content's high, so you may well get longer.
That sounds lovely. And you could mix that with some sparkling water you've made yourself or some ordinary water or...
Exactly. It's a nice way to make a non-alcoholic cocktail without having to go out to the shops.
Well, I think we'll all be doing quite a lot of sort of virtual chatting with our friends now and sort of raising the odd glass of cordial. That sounds like a very civilised one to drink. Any other tips or suggestions you've got, Steve, before you go?
So at the moment, if you keep an eye on my Foraging Chef page, so it's The Foraging Chef on Facebook, if you've got any ingredients in your store cupboards you don't know how to use up, you don't know how to combine, please feel free to drop me a message on there and we can discuss how you can go through and help each other out in these times.
That sounds like a really kind offer, Steve. That sounds lovely. Oh, well, I wish all the best to you and your family and take care.
You too, Steve. Stay safe.
And that was Steve Thompson, the Foraging Chef. A look at his Facebook page is a great way to keep in touch with him and his suggestions, and photos too. Very helpful. We have suffered from pandemics before in this country, and Sue has been looking into them and how it changed what people ate.
Well, we need to, first of all, be aware of the fact that the first Black Death, the first bubonic plague, actually was recorded in 1348 and went on for 4 years. But then what could almost be called the Long Black Death period, i.e. other plagues, went on right until the onset of plague in Europe in 1771. So the first Black Death killed at least 60% of the population in both rural and urban areas. And actually, locally, we've got a very good example. In Great Shelford, originally was a sprawling medieval village, and it stretched more than a kilometre along the high street and had two greens. And then after that, it was reduced to a single 200-metre row of houses beside the church. So we've had this hitting home, which people have obviously are not aware of. And in the bubonic plague period in London in 1515, actually Cambridge University suspended its classes. Times have revisited us again. What happened? Actually, there were certain remedies as to what people should consume during a period of the plague. It was suggested that because there were what are known as the bodily humours, that the bodily humours could be balanced by certain items eaten during a plague period. Common advice was to avoid fruit, but consume roast meat, spices, vinegar, verjuice, which was unripe grape juice, not wine, sugar, and also have other easily digestible foods like good bread and poultry. It's interesting that vinegar was a very common remedy for plague. So what were some of the other things that were being suggested? It was suggested that because emotions affected health, physicians suggested melancholy should be avoided and people should keep good company, drink good wine and eat good meat. and this was a poem against the plague written in France in 1420. Well, we're not allowed to keep good company at the moment, but we perhaps can drink good wine and eat good meat. What was actually the effect of the plague, though? Well, the elite in society really suffered, as they were really unaccustomed to experiencing want and not being able to get what they normally fed from. But the lower orders of society actually benefited because there was an increased demand for labour, particularly at the end of the plague period. And they found that their wages rose because they were in demand, and they were actually able to improve their standards of living after the first bubonic plague. And in fact, the average diet of an English peasant pre the plague was bread and oatmeal pottage, very little meat and some very thin ale. But then after the Black Death, they could actually now be able to eat beef and mutton instead of preserved meat or bacon. They tended to eat wheat bread instead of barley, and they could also have fresh fish instead of salted herring. Interestingly, in William Langland's poem, Piers Plowman, written in 1360, said that the beggars refused the bread that beans were in, and they wanted to have clean white bread and clean wheat, and they refused cheap halfpenny ale. The poem said, no cheap ale and none would drink, but of the best and the brownest that brewers sell. And they also demanded fresh fish and fried fish. They, in fact, had a better diet after the plague rather than before. The last interesting point about what was suggested during times of plague was actually coffee, and that was a remedy against the plague. And this was in 1721, and it was suggested particularly by the impecunious botanist Richard Bradley, who became Professor of Botany at Cambridge University, that the correct use of coffee just supported the drinker's vital flame, protecting the drinker from fear and despair, and that to gain coffee's maximum benefits, Bradley recommended the following dosage, at least twice a day, first in the morning and at 4 in the afternoon. So, interesting suggestions as what one should consume in the time of plague. Let's hope that people are going to be eating sensibly, drinking sensibly, drinking coffee potentially, and relearning some of the skills that perhaps we might have forgotten about.
And that was Sue Bailey looking back at previous pandemics involving the Black Death. You can always grow your own food, of course. Here's Dave Fox from Trumpington Allotments, always a welcome voice on flavour here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Hello, Dave. I hear there's some good news for allotmenteers.
Well, yes. Far be it from me to ever agree with Michael Gove, but on television a couple of days ago, he said that going to the allotment counted as your daily exercise, and so you're still allowed to do it. And he did make the good point that allotments, by their nature, is individual people on their own plot with a lot of space around them. And so I think as long as we're sensible, we can do extreme social distancing. I mean, you know, why not always be 10 metres away from someone? Then there's like zero chance of catching it by air dispersal. We still do have to be very careful about surfaces. So gates and padlocks and keypads for some sites. It would be a really good idea if sites could organise some hand gel for people to wash their hands, or some means of actually washing the lock itself to avoid contamination of surfaces, which are obviously shared. I think that, I'm pretty sure that toilets and other shared facilities on site must be closed. There's just far too many opportunities for transfer of this virus by surfaces.
Right.
And unfortunately, events are going to have to be cancelled. You know, I mean, we planned plant swaps here at Foster Road Allotments in Trumpington. So we have one in May and June and another in June. And they're very popular. And obviously, we don't know how this thing is going to pan out, but I think we're probably going to have to cancel them. We'll make a decision nearer the time. But that's bad. Perhaps we can leave plants somewhere for people to collect. Maybe there's something we can do, but obviously we can't do anything which involves bringing a large number of people close together. That would be a very bad idea.
It's not a thing that I ever do, because it always strikes me as being a bit risky, but some people wash their hands. You know, in allotments that have water troughs, some people wash their hands. I'm always worried about blue-green algae, so I never do. But is there any risk or any advice on not doing that?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, they shouldn't be doing that in the first place. I mean, it's a shared resource, and you could you could transfer any disease. But right now, that water is potentially a carrier of the virus.
And are there any other cautions?
Well, obviously, any member who's got symptoms should stay at home and self-isolate for 14 days. I think it's also an idea for a lot of societies to limit the number of people coming on site. You know, having earlier said that we can probably keep 10 metres away from each other, well, that's not true. If you bring a large family group down or invite friends, I think we should really be telling people it's members only for the period of the pandemic. Unfortunately, you know, there are lots of downsides. Oh, tools, that's another one, though. Obviously, I have a cache of tools which I leave at the end of my plot for people to share, and I think I need to remove them immediately now that I think of it. Thank you for making me think of that. Or put a sign up saying do not touch, because the virus could persist, especially on wooden handles, which are difficult to wipe clean, even if you've got a disinfectant or a sanitizer liquid. So sharing tools, bad idea. And you know, wear gloves when using tools as well, so at least you're not transferring it from your skin onto the tool handle.
When we get there, Dave, what sort of seeds can we sow at this time of year?
Quite a lot. So I've already put in broad beans and peas and early potatoes. So they're usually the first three that I do. Lettuce and radish can go in now, and they'll produce pretty quickly. We've been having some frost overnight in the last few days, so maybe don't sow too much outside. I mean, by all means, give it a go with stuff like beetroot or carrot. But in my experience, they sometimes don't do very well if they're put out too early. All I'd say is give it a go, but don't put all your seed in right now. Keep two-thirds of the packet back and sow in a few months' time. Sow in a few weeks' time, I mean.
And start them off possibly in the house, in pots.
Yes, on a windowsill, or if you're lucky enough to have a greenhouse or a space in our share polytunnel here at Trumpington. That's a good place to put them. Also, we're getting to the point where you want to be sowing tomatoes, which are raised indoors for a couple of months until they go out at the end of May. And the same's true of slightly more ambitious crops like peppers and aubergine. They need a long growing season, so really would it be better to sow them before. I've been ill, so I've had a lot of things to do, so I think I might be buying some seedlings in by post. Although I think I might need to order early, because Grow Your Own is potentially seeing a huge revival as a result of this pandemic. And therefore, the seed suppliers and the companies that sell seedlings are going to be heavily oversubscribed. So if you are thinking of ordering some seeds or seedlings, I'd say do it now, because otherwise you might find yourself at the back of a very long queue.
Right. So you think people are going to move more towards growing their own then? So some of that infamous decking might be ripped up from people's back gardens.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, yeah, do something positive with it. Build a shed with it, maybe.
Yeah, right. Okay, good. So you're pretty pleased to be outdoors again.
Well, I'm relieved that we are still allowed to do it. It's an activity which is hugely healthy. And if it didn't count as exercise, I would say it counts as food shopping. It's still essential for people who grow their own. The community that we have on allotment sites is going to help to see us through this. It's really very pleasant out here. 2 days
This all sounds beneficial to mental health as well, actually.
I think so, if you can get out there, yeah.
Yeah, great stuff, Dave. Thank you very much.
Now, there's no news section today. We've covered the important things in the body of the programme, but we can't go without our helping of green onions. So here is Booker T and the MGs to play us out. Don't forget we are here on alternate Saturdays at 1, repeated on Sundays at 2, and then podcast early in the next week.
And we'll be back in 2 weeks' time on the 8th of April. But coming up next on Cambridge 105 Radio is Bookmark, in which Lee Chambers talks with Emma Mitchell about her book, The Wild Remedy. André Margeau discusses his new collection of poems, Blood Rain, and Awis Khan talks about bringing Lahore to life in his debut novel, The Company of Strangers. And there's more writing and poetry at 3 p.m. with Off the Page, but that's all from us. Many thanks for listening. Look after yourselves, and until next time, goodbye.